Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that is going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line right now Cal Grunwald. He's one of our supporters. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening economically throughout the world, because I think it is so vitally important that the average American understands that we are in real financial problems. Now, if you read the newspapers and watch the stock market, it seems to be going up. It was up 50 or 60 points today. Many of the commentators are telling us that it's just a matter of time before the economy takes off. Look at all those new jobs being created. And, of course, we are so fortunate the Federal Reserve is going to begin raising interest rates to prevent inflation, although the inflation is very low. It's only what, the 3 or 4%? And if you believe that, why, you're incredibly naive, because what they've done is take all the issues that are really important, the things you really use, like food and energy and gasoline and fuel, and they've taken those out of what they use to determine the rate of inflation. And they keep juggling the figures, and the old saying that figures don't lie, but liars certainly figure, because they don't want the American people to know that inflation is really 8 or 9%, and as this continues very long, it'll wipe out the value of our dollar. The dollar is falling in reference to the euro, came back a little recently, and now off another 3 or 4%. So what do you do to protect yourself? Well, you could put your money in the bank, but then, of course, you lose because of inflation at the rate of 7 or 8% a year. Doesn't take very long to wipe out everything. And the people who are in fixed assets like annuities or bonds or CDs or pension funds or bank accounts, they're going to simply be wiped out down the line by the process of inflation. So with us is Cal Grunwald, and he's been following this for quite a long while. Cal, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Well, it's good to be here again, Stan.
Well, tell us what your take is on what's going on.
Well, again, it's more, you know, media manipulation to confuse the masses, get them bewildered, and keep them that way. As you've been telling everybody, the all the numbers are manipulated, and they use them to their own gain. The real truth, of course, is that we're in dire straits. The economy is going down fast, as is the economy of the world, but it's really affected the dollar. And if people have investments out there in typical things like you've been saying, money markets and CDs, mutual funds, pension funds, annuities, these are the things that are being hit the hardest, even though people, you know, can't see them eroded away. They're being eroded away, behind closed doors. That's somebody else's closed doors, by the way, not their own. So a safe haven, obviously, is just to put whatever you don't want to lose into gold and some silver. Have it with you in case, in case of when things really get bad, then you're pretty much in control of your own wealth, not the bankers or Wall Street.
Well, of course, I don't think that people who invest in gold and silver are necessarily going to make a lot of money, although the potential is there. But I think people are trying to protect what they have, and I think that's the important thing in times like this. And if you make anything, why, that certainly is an advantage. I had lunch the other day with my neighbor, who's a stockbroker, who's been studying these things for many years, and he's an expert on the charts and what the Federal Reserve is doing, and he studied the history of money for a long time. He was telling me that many of the money market people who run the big funds, they're in cash or they're in things like bonds or things like that, that they have, really, they don't know which way the market's going to go. He commented that Warren Buffett is sitting on some $41 billion. and just waiting for things to come along that he thinks are worthwhile buying. But he's sitting on cash. He's got himself in a cash position now. Now, in many respects, that sounds really great, but you have to understand what Warren Buffett is doing. Warren Buffett has invested his money overseas. He's not keeping his cash here in the United States because he knows the value of the dollar is declining in relationship to European currencies and probably very soon in relationship to many other currencies, which are going to have to protect themselves from the inflation that we've been exporting throughout the world for many years by our massive deficits, both our trade deficits and our budget deficits. And they're two entirely different things, but the important thing to understand is we are the biggest debtor nation in the world today, both internationally and domestically. And the level of debt of our people, of our governments, and of our federal government is just beyond comprehension. Have you been following that, Cal?
Very much so. In fact, it was very interesting. You were mentioning that. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal a few days ago, we talked about just that very thing with our current account deficit and our trade deficit. I wanted to read just a short paragraph here that this is, I think, pretty kind of hard hitting. It says, a high U.S. trade gap coupled with a record first quarter current account deficit has shifted market attention away from rising U.S. interest rates and back toward the weak dollar. And it says some fear that over the long term, the growing twin deficits in the current account and federal budget will force foreign cash flow into the United States treasuries to dry up, triggering massive dollar depreciation.
Well, I think
that's where it's headed.
Well, I think that what they're really saying is that at the present time, it's the foreign cash flow into our debt structure. Now, America is going behind $1.6 to $1.7 billion every day. We have to, of course, get somebody to buy the bonds to make up for our deficits. You have to be able to pay the money. Money's got to come from someplace. We don't have it. I think the most carefully kept secret is government doesn't have any money. The only money the government has is what it forcibly takes from us by taxes. It doesn't have any slush funds there. It's been stealing from the Social Security Fund for years and simply putting in IOUs that have nothing behind those IOUs. So the government can tax the people, but if you tax them too much, people just quit paying taxes or leave the country. It can go ahead and print money, which is inflationary and destroys the value of everything, or they can borrow money, and that's what they're doing to the tune of $1.6, $1.7 billion a day. And for many years, they've been actually borrowing it from other countries, from Japan, from China, from Germany, and other countries have been buying our debt, and at least the European countries have stopped buying our debt, and the Chinese and the Japanese are beginning to back away from it, which means that the Federal Reserve System has to create money out of nothing and buy up those bonds, and that, of course, is highly inflationary, and every time they do that, every single day, why they erode the value of the currency further, which means the destruction of the value of people's money. Oh, they still have a dollar, but it just doesn't buy much. It buys less and less and less every single week, every single month. So, you know, faced with this, Cal, you know, where are we headed from your point of view?
Well, people have been saying, I've heard this a lot, that they expect things to hold up until after the election, and then they expect to crash. But I don't think that's like a magical formula. Things can happen anytime, and I think we're headed that way very fast. Of course, the wild card in this whole equation is our terrorist attacks. You know, and of course the government planned 9/11 and worked out perfectly for them. You know, if we have another terrorist attack, a major one, we could easily see martial law, and then, you know, all the institutions in this country will be closed down, or, you know, they're just going to shut their doors, and then everybody is going to be in a panic because they can't get their money out of where they trusted it would be safe. So that's why it's important to, as you said, you know, Warren Buffett's in cash. Well, he might be in cash, but I'm sure it's not in the bank. And he, you know, a lot of it's overseas. Years ago, around 1998, 99, he bought 20% of the world's above ground silver with 2% of his wealth. And so he's not a dummy. He knows that the metals are the place to be. because he's more visible than most of the investors in the world, just what he's doing. He gets some publicity, but the big money boys, they very, very quietly, they're buying a lot of gold and they're buying a lot of silver, and they're just sitting on it because they know ultimately when the dollar does fail, they're going to be all right. They're going to be laughing all the way to the weight of the bank because they did the right thing. They did the prudent thing and then the shrewd thing when the time was right. While they at the same time convinced the public that gold is a thing of the past, it'll never be any good anymore, and all the propaganda has prevailed, and the American public is just duped sitting there, you know, thinking everything is all right.
Well, it's interesting, Cal. I've been at this for a long time, and when prices are going up, everybody gets excited, and everybody wants to invest. When prices are a great buy, nobody buying, and I mean, this is just sort of the way people are. You have to get people, you know, emotionally involved. And, you know, when, of course, you turn on the news, they're talking about gold and silver on the news every evening. That means the price is about to top out and you shouldn't be buying. You don't want to buy when everybody else is buying. You want to buy when people are not buying. You want to buy when all the news is bad. And with the old adage, you want to buy when the blood is running in the streets. And then, of course, you know, you sell when everybody is really optimistic and when everybody's clamoring. And so many people got into the market back in 1980 at a ridiculously high price and they lost their shirts. But that's the way the game is played, because they play games with our minds. And they create optimism when it's unjustified. They create pessimism when it's unjustified. And until people can think out of the box and think independently, why, they're going to continue to get fleeced, just like the poor old sheep that goes into the pen.
Well, that's right. Again, I just go back to something very, very practical. And I always ask people questions when I talk to them on the phone, you know, what, you know, you have to think down the road a little bit. What's going to happen when, you know, things, you know, when the dollar collapses? What are you going to do to provide for your family? How are you going to feed them? How are you going to clothe them? What are you going to use for currency when the dollar fails? You know, every paper currency ever printed has failed, and the dollar's not that far from it. You know, once, you know, these foreign governments stop buying our debt, you know, the Wall Street experts are even saying this is going to trigger massive dollar depreciation. Already gone down 40% in the last 2 years, you know, but we haven't even begun to see the bottom yet. And so people who have been trusting their investments in Wall Street or the banks, annuities that have been, you know, fine for all these years are suddenly going to fail them. And then how are you going to buy food for your family if you don't have some real money like silver or gold? What are you going to do? You have to have a commodity that you can barter with that everybody else needs. Where are you going to store that commodity? You don't have a barn big enough or a house big enough. So that's why gold and silver are the medium of exchange, and they have been for 5,000 years. And we're going to see it, I think, way before we even want to, that we're going to be right back in that same situation. So people should consider, you know, now is not the time to be investing and speculating. Now is the time to be protecting and preserving what you already have, and, you know, looking with very, very great caution at the future, see what may be in store for all of us.
Well, now, did you ever read the book Fiat Money, Inflation in France? Do you know that book by Andrew Dickinson White?
No, I've never read that.
Well, I read this 40 years ago, and it had been written 100 years before that. Basically, it was written by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the dean of or president of Yale University, and he wrote it about something that had happened, 50 years before, or maybe 100 years before. But anyway, it's a story of what happened in France after the French Revolution in 1789. And, of course, what had happened, originally John Law in the early 1700s, he was a Scotsman, and the French king was spending more money than he could had, and he couldn't tax the people anymore, and what was he going to do? The king looked like he was going to go bankrupt. So the Scotsman came in, and he said, look, let me start issuing money. We can create prosperity here. We'll use, you own a lot of property over in Louisiana, and that was, of course, later on they sold the United States to the Louisiana Purchase, but we'll use that land, and we'll use some of the land we've seized from other sources, the government's property, and we'll use that as the collateral, the backing for the paper money we're going to print. So we're going to create prosperity here in France simply by printing paper money, and the people will have to have that to pay their taxes with, so they'll begin to trade in this. and then we'll begin to produce prosperity. Well, they did it, and it really worked, and everybody was prosperous until the prices began to rise so high, and the economy began to slow down, so they had to print more money to get back to where they'd been. And then there was prosperity again, but very soon, why, they found that the economy began to slow, so they had to print more money. And before long, they printed so much money that money became worthless. The whole system collapsed, and that was the story of John Law. Well, they tried to do the same thing after the French Revolution in 1789. So about by 1790 or 1791, they'd started this cycle again. And eventually it led to total collapse and the imposition of a military dictatorship under a man named Napoleon Bonaparte. Well, you know, the people here in America thought that they were really smart. We could do exactly the same thing. We could take us off the gold standard and the silver standard, and we would just have intelligent people running things. Of course, Aristotle talked about this many, many years ago, and he said there's nothing wrong with fiat money as long as you have people with superior intelligence who are totally trustworthy and would never, of course, do anything wrong. But the problem is you never find that sort of individual. So this has been known for thousands of years, what happens when you do exactly what we're doing today, and that is go on to a fiat money system. But we offer this book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, and we offer, it's an inexpensive little book, but you can get that, and you can also get Bastiat's The Law, written in 1848 by a contemporary of Karl Marx, What's Wrong with Socialism. Those two books will give you more information about what's going on than any college education that I know. And I think if the American people really understood what's going on today, has been tried thousands of times before. And when you get to this point with massive debt, and of course, if America was isolated, we might be able to pull it off, but we're part of the world. And eventually, of course, this whole thing is going to implode because we've got trillions of dollars of debt and only a relatively few $100 billion of money. Like playing musical chairs, when the music stops, there aren't enough chairs, and some people, of course, are left standing. And that's exactly what's going to happen on an increasing scale here to America, and you're out of the game. And I think an awful lot of people are going to go bankrupt, don't you, Cal?
Well, absolutely. We've gotten into a massive credit card debt and all-time record foreclosures. Of course, the media's hiding all this. This is going on just, you know, rampantly across the country. Now, and it's getting worse all the time. You know, jobs, we're shipping overseas, you know, every day. New trade treaties are coming up just to rob America of their prosperity and of their, you know, livelihood, and you know, we're giving it to everybody else. So we're going to be reduced, we're quickly being reduced to a status of a third world, you know, country, you know, with our economy and our standard of living. So this is happening, but people don't realize it is. They're just like the frog in the water, and won't realize until it's too late that, you know, they should have done something about it. And I talk to people all the time. It's very interesting. I talk to people all the time that, you know, they either hear me on the radio or they call in. Some of them are very concerned, and they do something, and others are just saying, well, I think I'm going to wait and see. I think I'm going to wait and see what happens. And they're like chronic procrastinators. You know, that if you know what's right, you better do it when you know it's right, because you're probably not going to get another chance. And I think that's kind of where we are right now. People have been saying, I don't think we have much time left. People have a sense of all this, but if you don't act on your senses and if you don't respond to your logical fears, you're going to get caught. And that's what I don't like to see, people get caught. If, when they know better, why get caught? Why don't you do something that's prudent when you have the fears or concerns? If you wait, that time has passed, and then all of a sudden you're caught in the trap.
Well, Cal has written a very interesting treatise on the perils of the coin business. Why don't you get your telephone number out before we go to the break, Cal? What's your telephone number? People would like to get the treatise that you wrote.
Yes, it's 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682. And I've got a 26-page paper on gold and the scams in the coin industry. If you're considering buying gold and silver,
okay,
better read this.
We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Cal Gwynvall. We're talking about what's happening today as far as the economy is concerned. I don't think we've ever been in such a difficult position. In years past, they were able to juggle things. I can remember back in 1980 when we had an inflationary spiral. In fact, inflation was up to 17 or 18%. And what they did was they just raised the interest rates and raised the interest rates until they really just ground the economy to a stop to break the back of the inflation. So they could do that at the time because we had basically a sound economy. That was before globalization doing away with our tariffs, doing away with our industries. We've actually lost 3 million manufacturing jobs over this last few years. A wonderful article recently by Paul Craig Roberts going into this myth of the new jobs they're creating. Oh, they tell you we created 125,000 jobs this month and 250,000 jobs that month, but if you look at them, why, they're all poor-paying jobs. They're not manufacturing jobs. In fact, in this latest report that came out, and I think there were well over 100,000 or more jobs, but there are only 30,000 in manufacturing. And if you don't manufacture, all the rest of it is service, and you cannot be a prosperous country with a service economy. And, of course, this is part of a planned program to shift American jobs overseas, to shift American industry overseas, to build up the economy of people in third world nations and impoverished nations and progressively impoverish the American people. But you can't come out and say that. If you did, why, the American people would vote the politicians out of office. So you don't let them know what's happening. You control both political parties so that even if the people do know what's happening, they do not have an option. In other words, if you control both political parties, who are you going to vote for? And, of course, a few people are trying to tell what's really going on. Everybody scoffs at them and ridicules them and demonizes them. Or worse still, they simply ignore them as if they don't exist. And so since so few people have a voice, why we find that very, very people in the general population can possibly believe that the terrible things that lie ahead really do lie ahead. Do you run into that when you talk to people, Cal, this idea, well, it just couldn't be true, or I don't want to believe it's true, or I refuse to believe it's true?
I run into it all the time. Just like, unfortunately, like the Jews in Nazi Germany, they didn't, you know, they got on the trains and they were going to a work camp, you know, where life would be better. And, they just could not believe that it was true. That's why it was possible for 70,000 Nazis to control 6 million Jews. Because they simply didn't believe it was true. But when they got there, it was too late. And they couldn't do anything about it because the trains didn't go in reverse. And they were stuck. And so that's, most people are like that. You know, and of course, we, by nature, we don't want to believe anything bad, because then, if we do, we have to change the course of our life, and we have to do something about it, and we've just been programmed to be complacent because nothing has ever happened to the United States. We're the superpower, and we're invincible, but the way things are going now, you know, world foment against us, you know, France and Germany are uniting, building up their armaments. Just read an article the other day how Germany, even though their economy isn't that good, sinking billions of dollars into building up their weaponry and armaments, and their expressed desire is to come right after us, along with France and Russia and China.
All right, hold that thought. Hold that thought for just a minute, because we're going to bring our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Cal Gwynvall. We're talking about what's happening to America economically, and it really is not much different than happened to ancient Greece when the people impoverished themselves because of democracy and what happened to just the corruption. Eventually, they couldn't tax the people anymore, so they corrupted the currency. There was a progressive moral breakdown, and there was just no one willing to eventually to fight for Greece. The same thing happened in Rome, and you read Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, you find it was a flagrant homosexuality, the breakdown of the family, of welfare system that provided something for everybody, but of course a limited financial base, a destruction of their economy, progressive destruction of the economy and corruption of the money, constant wars, and eventually why the soldiers were all overseas fighting other wars when the barbarians were flooding into Rome. And, you know, the contrast with that between what happened to the western part of the Roman Empire and what happened to the eastern part of the Roman Empire in Constantinople, where they maintained a sovereign currency, they maintained their moral standards, they maintained their solid religious beliefs. And, of course, Constantinople survived into the mid-1200s, whereas Rome fell in 476 A.D., but this is what they don't teach in our schools, that there's nothing new under the sun. Same thing is happening here that happened in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. It was the monetary irresponsibility of the Weimar Republic in the 1930s that led to the assumption of power of Adolf Hitler in 1933. And people have forgotten the rampant inflation, the destruction of the money that led to the disillusionment that caused people to turn to the all-powerful leader. His name was Adolf Hitler. So, you know, Cal, as you talk to people about this, do you think any of them or many of them have any idea of the economic history of the world?
No. Again, obviously, you've studied extensively, traveled extensively, so you know these things, and so nothing is a surprise to you, as if, you know, you could see everything unfolding in front of you because you know history. And, of course, the old saying is those who don't know history are bound to repeat it. It's very, very true. You know, if you don't, you know, the mouse walking into the glue trap only does it once, you know, because he doesn't know it's there. He doesn't know it's dangerous. If you have knowledge of the glue trap, you can avoid it. And most people don't even think they're walking into a glue trap, but they are. Once you're stuck, and there's no recourse.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's important that people understand that we are in real economic problems. The only growth industry today is the military. And, of course, as the economy gets worse, they're going to have to expand the military, going to have to expand the war. They're going to have to start drafting young boys and girls because they're not going to have any jobs. And, well, they get them into the military. They get them off the streets. It's a lot cheaper than paying them welfare. And besides, they can be used. As Henry Kissinger said in The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein on page 194, our military are simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy. That's the attitude of the ruling elite towards our military, and they don't care how many die overseas. Oh, they may publicly say how terrible it is, but really, they would not be starting this war if they were really concerned about the lives of our children. And you know they're going to start the draft because they're denying over and over and over again that it's coming. So what they're doing is really preparing us, and one of these days they're going to say, gee, you know, we just have to have more in the way of military. And what we're finding is about 60% of the military are not re-upping at the present time, and the people who completed their terms are suddenly being told, well, you signed a contract, but we're going to extend your time in service whether you want it or not. That's leading to ever more disillusionment on the part of so many of the people in the military, and that's why we're going to have a draft down the line. And it's about time the American people got involved in this battle, because we are responsible. We still have the ability to influence what's going on if we really care enough to become involved. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Cal Grunwald. We're talking about what's happening to our economy. And the only part of the economy that is really doing well is our military. Our defense spending is doing well, our defense production, and that, of course, is where people are getting jobs today, is in the military or working over there in Iraq. You know, they get pretty good salaries over there, but, of course, they can lose their head in the process. Well, when we get back, we're going to be talking with Cal Grunwald, and we'll welcome your calls here, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I've been at this for, well, 42 years now, and I've seen the economic cycles come and go, and I've seen gold go up, I've seen gold go down, but I've never seen a time when our nation has such a massive debt. We used to be the greatest lender nation in the world. Now we're the greatest debtor nation in the world. And, of course, no other nation has ever been on a fiat money system and survived. And I don't believe that our fiat money system will survive too much longer. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Cal, tell us a little bit about. Well, I think we'll wait. I think until we get the this rest of the people back to talk about some of the scams in the coin business, because I think that people who are unsuspecting who get into coins really can be taken like sheep to the slaughter, don't you?
Well, absolutely. See, the gold coin industry is basically unregulated, so whatever goes goes, and it's buyer beware. Unfortunately, there's really nothing out there that you can read, like a consumer reports, to find out what's a good, sewing machine or a toaster or a car or a vacuum cleaner. There's nothing out there, and there's no rating system, there's nothing. So whatever companies want to do to sell as far as the coins, whatever they want to charge, whatever they want to say, there's really no regulation on it. So it's really kind of a sad state of affairs. Most of the gold coin companies out there, the bigger ones, they're charging exorbitant, anywhere from 35% to 125% on their coins. And most of them are the wrong kinds of coins that people should be getting into, the real high mint state coins. In fact, I was talking to a man today. He was talking about some MS-69 American Eagles. MS-70 American Eagles. Well, the American Eagle is a United States bullion coin. You can buy it for probably $30 to $40 above what spot gold is. But what these coin companies do is they get like 2004 American Eagles. They send them to PCGS or NGC. Those are the two independent grading firms, Professional Coin Grading Service or National Guarantee Corporation. And they send them there, and they say, you just encapsulate them in plastic, the nicest looking ones, and you mark them, you grade them MS-69 or MS-70, which is like a proof coin, and then you can mark them up about 100%, send them back to us, and we'll sell them to the public. And this is one of the biggest scams. It's becoming more and more prevalent now, and if people aren't aware, you end up paying 100% premium on a bullion coin.
Hold that thought right just for a moment. We've got Kathy calling from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hi, Kathy. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to turn my radio down.
All right, fine.
Well, am I on now?
You are on the radio. You're being heard all over the country from Spokane to Utica and Albany, New York, all from coast to coast, as it were.
Well, that's pretty interesting and a little intimidating.
I know it is. Well, don't be intimidated. I'm going to take a moment here, because we're going to bring the rest of our stations back on board, and I want them to hear what you have to say. Just hold a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Cal Grunwald, who is certainly one of our supporters. He is talking about gold coins and gold coin purchases and some of the scams that are out there that where you can get fleeced. And we've got Kathy calling us from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Kathy, what was it that you wanted to ask?
Well, thank you for taking my call, first of all, and thank you for having your program on the air. It's the best that I've found.
Flattery gets you almost anything. Go ahead.
I just wondered what you both think about I'm a poor person. I have debts to pay off. This idea is very frightening of, a collapse of our economy. Certainly a recession or going into a depression or whatever form it takes. What advice do you have? I'm basically widowed. I'm alone. I'm in my 50s. My prime working years are pretty well past. I'm a caregiver. Both of my daughters are one's in her late teens and one's in her 30s, and oddly enough, if this draft is reinstated, they're both going to be of draftable age, even though one is the 34-year-old, the 31-year-old, rather, is married. But my concern is, of course, on this, the draft situation, but also What advice do you have for poor people who really don't have money, much of any, to invest in anything? We're just kind of living hand to mouth, and we don't have the assets to convert into gold and silver.
All right, fine. That's a very legitimate question. What would you say to Kathy, Cal?
Well, I would just, the only advice I could give is just, you know, to be frugal, live sensibly. You might want to, I would store up some extra food, you know, buy some if you can every week, because food is going to be the commodity, of course, that is going to mean either survival or not. And so that's what I would do, you know, try to pay your bills and put some extra food aside. If you can get to the place where you have a year's worth of food, at least you've got a pretty good chance to make it, you know, through tough times.
Well, Kathy, we are entering into very difficult times, and I fear that many of the people, you know, are not well-to-do, are going to, you know, be in real trouble. You just don't take on debt. This is the big problem. They're trying to get everybody to buy. And America has become the consumer for the world. We are supporting the Chinese economy. We are supporting the Japanese economy. And, you know, America is the biggest consumer in the world today. The whole idea of drop until you shop, go down to Kmart and spend all you can, don't do it. Cut back, be frugal, don't buy anything you don't need, get out of debt as much as you can. Do you have a home, or are you paying for a home, or are you renting what?
I rent.
All right. Well, yeah. Then the thing is that you may have an opportunity, if you can accumulate any money at all, to buy something down the line, because I think property values are going to come down and come down dramatically. I think the mistake that people are making now is borrowing money on their homes. My goodness, you get all this money. The house is worth, you know, $100,000 more than it was 2 years ago, and you can get this at just on an adjustable mortgage rate, and it may be at 4.5%. So why not do it and spend that money and get what you want? And the reason you don't want to do it is because if you do it and that adjustable rate mortgage goes up to 2 or 3 times what it is today, people are going to lose their homes. So, you know, all you can really do, you know, in your situation try to save, try to get out of debt, and then think, you know, there are all sorts of things people can do in the way of home businesses. We have a home business. So this is what we do and how we help to support ourselves. You know, I was an orthopedic surgeon all my life, and I never thought you could come up with a home mail order business and really make it profitable. Well, of course, we put all the money back into buying radio time, but there are lots of things of this sort that you can do on the side, and I know you're probably tired at the end of the day, but you need to think of trying to find something that you can do to get an additional income, because this is the time to do it. Once we go into a really contracting economy, it's going to be very difficult for everybody, and I think we're all going to suffer, and I think a lot of people are going to lose their homes and lose their cars and lose their jobs, and I think we're going to see, I don't know if you saw that picture, it was a Seabiscuit, but pictures in there of what it was like during the Great Depression. Now, that was a man-made depression. The Federal Reserve intentionally contracted the money supply, and they sent their money over to Adolf Hitler and over to Joe Stalin, but there was no money here. They created that whole problem to slow down the economy, and, of course, also to transfer from weak hands, factories, homes, everything from weak hands to strong hands. The people who had money made out like bandits, and the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. Our job is just not to let that happen, or at least to warn people what's going to happen and tell them to start making preparations today, because there's some very difficult times ahead. As far as your children are concerned, I think that we have to get involved now. How you vote in later this year is going to determine whether we're going to have a draft or not, and if we have either the Republican or the Democrat in there, why we're going to have a draft. And it's about time people begin to realize that we get the government we deserve. And behind all of this are spiritual forces. And you've heard me say this many times, but I honestly believe that many of our leaders are influenced by dark spiritual forces. We need to pray for them, but we also need, of course, to try to get a spiritual revival going in this country. That's the only thing that's going to save this country.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for answering my questions. And later on in the program, if you have any ideas on when this is all going to start happening, I mean, it's already starting. If we've lost 40 or 60% on our dollar in the last 3 years, it's already starting.
We've already lost about 30 or 40% against the European currency. And that's what's really so frightening. And the American people aren't being told. In fact, they're being told things are good and they're going to get better. Look what a great job the administration is doing. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.
Bye-bye. All right. Cal?
I'm here.
Okay, fine. Basically, we're talking about some of the scams in the coin industry and really what they do. Why don't you just go over that again? What they do, they just take the bullion coins, they get them graded, then they pack them in plastic, and then they tell people, well, you're safe with these, that they won't be confiscated. How does that work?
Well, that's one of the easiest ways to make money, because these companies, they send all these brand new American Eagles, which look real pristine because they're just first emitted. They send them to these two independent grading firms, CCGS and NGC, tell them to put them in a 50-cent plastic case, and then they mark them up about 100%, calling them proof, numismatic, private gold. And, of course, that's very common now these days. The other way, of course, there's many, many ways. Foreign gold coins are in the eyes of our government considered bullion. Pardon me. And they're confiscatable, but these coin companies, they tout them as prior to 1934, which only applies to American gold coins. And they say, well, they're private, they're non-confiscatable too. And they put commissions on those anywhere from 40% to 75%. And, the public is just unsuspecting. They don't know.
Well, does anybody, if they were going to confiscate coins, nobody really knows what's going to happen, and I don't think they're necessarily going to confiscate it, but, can anybody say that this coin will be confiscatable and that one won't?
No, but the present law in this country does exempt rare and unusual coins, from the confiscation, the ones that were minted in this country, and there are 49 countries around the world which exempt their own countries' gold or silver coins from confiscation. It's like preserving their history in coin form by protecting them. So those are the coins, the American $5, $10, $20 liberties, the silver coins in our country that were minted prior to 65 when they were 90% silver. These coins are protected currently. So I agree that nobody can guarantee that they won't be confiscated, because our government probably will do that again just to be ornery and oppressive.
And first, the thing is, they can change the law tomorrow, and everything you've been told before really isn't true.
Well, that's true. That's their prerogative, and that's what they've done in the past. So what's to say they won't do it in the future? But there's a lot of advantages. I recommend both, the old gold, lowest grades that you can have, like very fine, extra fine, almost uncirculated. Also, I recommend bullion, and what I sell a lot of, like 1/10 ounce American Eagles. A lot of them, because they're just excellent, barter coins. Yes, they're gold, but, having a tenth of an ounce, if gold is $2,000 an ounce, you've got a coin that's worth $200. You can buy a lot of things with that, but I do highly recommend silver is for barter, mostly gold is for preserving wealth, but, you should have some. Again, I stress over and over again, and it's so important. People have to realize what's ahead of us. They have to see that, there is going to be massive dollar devaluation or depreciation. And what are you currently doing? How are you going to protect your wealth? What are you going to do suddenly? What are you going to do when suddenly the dollar is worth, 10 cents on the dollar? What are you going to do? And how are you going to protect your family? How are you going to provide for your family? People have to realize that this is going to happen in a matter of time, and they have to do something about it. And so even if you take 10, 15, 20% of your wealth and put it in the gold, at least it's a start. It's something to fall back on. I've got clients that put 50 to 75% of their wealth into gold because they realize that this is just a matter of time before things happen, and then it's going to be too late. When I talk to people who went through the Great Depression, I don't even have to convince them or even, you know, talk to them or persuade them that these things are going to happen. They already know it. And those are the people that buy, you know, buy gold and silver, you know, readily. Because, you know, they've been through it already. But most of the people in this country have not been through any hard times. They don't think it's going to happen. It can't happen to us. You know, it's kind of like the head in sand approach. But, you know, people have to get off that mentality. Of course, it's very difficult because the deluge of propaganda that's been thrown at us for years and years and years. Like you say, you've got to know the story behind the story in order to escape what's coming. And if you don't know the story behind the story, you're not going to escape what's coming.
Well, we can see what happened in Argentina. It was about somewhere two to three years ago. And the government there had said, we are going to tie the peso to the dollar. Now, Argentina has a history of going through inflationary spirals and wiping out the value of people's money. And they actually held the peso, they actually linked it to the dollar so that the currency was fairly stable. But the government continued to act irresponsibly. Every politician wanted to get his friends and his relatives and his supporters government jobs, so the government was spending far more money than it was taking in. And, of course, this is what went on. They had to keep inflating the money supply. And it finally got to the point where there was just no way that they could keep the dollar linked to the peso or the peso linked to the dollar. So they began borrowing money overseas. And they went to Europe, and they got a lot of people in Italy and in France to invest in Argentine bonds because they could get 10% interest on their money there. Wasn't that wonderful? And, of course, the local stockbroker or bond broker or financial advisors were touting Argentine bonds. And so foreign money poured into Argentina, and they could continue spending more than they were taking in. If they raised the taxes, they were going to lose the support of the people. And, of course, if they started firing government workers, they were going to have people mad at them. But finally, they got to the point where they faced total bankruptcy. They had all these loans they'd gotten from the International Monetary Fund. They couldn't meet. So what they did, one day they simply closed the banks, and they announced that they were breaking the bond between the peso and the dollar. And, of course, people were rioting in the streets, and they ended up losing 70% of everything they had. They impoverished the middle class. And, of course, all those poor people over in Spain and Italy who had bought the Argentine bonds, they were offered 25 cents on the dollar, take it or leave it. And if you don't take it, why, we're not going to offer it again. They refused to honor their IMF loans, apparently. Now the economy is getting back after they've wiped out the middle class. And once you get rid of all this debt, then you can start in all over again. So things are beginning to come back in Argentina. Now, the people who, of course, were in, got money and solid gold or silver or things that had inherent value, or the people who moved their money overseas or converted from peso to the dollar survived. But, of course, the average individual in Argentina did not. And what was once a thriving middle class has now been impoverished. And this is the story that's done over and over again. Do you see any similarities between that story and what's going on in America today, Cal?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's the middle class that will disappear completely. And in the last days now, we're going to be seeing two classes emerge after the middle class is gone. So because the middle class, you know, is the lock, stock, and barrel, totally ignorant of what's happening in the world and the country. They don't know history. They don't know what to do to react to anything that's happening because they're fed so much deception. So we're going to see once the middle class is gone, the very rich and the very poor, and the very poor, just like the feudal system in Europe, will be serving the very rich, and it's going to, you know, history again will repeat itself. And so I'm not saying that gold and silver are going to make the difference between you being rich or poor, but you'll have a fighting chance if you have something substantial like gold and silver to fall back on, because once the dollar fails, gold and silver will go out of sight. And again, the idea is not so that you're going to become wealthy. The idea is that you're going to be able to survive and provide for your family. If you have gold and silver, if you don't have it, the government's going to say, well, here's the bread line, here's the soup line, here's the concentration camp. You know, be happy because this is what your future is. So if you don't want that, you're going to have to do something about it while there's still time. You know, there's there's starting to be an availability problem. Gold went up to 402 today. Silver's up to 660 again. They're both on the climb. And so the bankers are having a tough time with all the chaos going on economically around the world. They're having a tough time keeping gold under 400. 400 is kind of like a psychology number. And so when gold starts climbing, people start buying, and we're having an availability problem now getting gold and silver. So it's, of course, you'll never read about that in the media, but that's what's happening. So people, if you're thinking about if you're thinking about buying some silver and buying some gold, now's the time to do it while there's relative sanity, you know, pervading. But when there's insanity pervading, you won't be able to buy anything, no matter how badly you want to, or how much money you throw at it. If it's just not available, it's not available. And then what are you going to do?
Well, Cal, would you want to get your telephone number out again, where you're offering this 26-page analysis of all the scams in the gold coin business?
Yes, my number is 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682. And in my paper, I go into detail, sometimes unfortunately rather tragic detail, of how people have been scammed. I just changed the names to protect them. But these are some pretty sad stories, and it's very, very typical of what's going on there all the time. Every day I talk to somebody who's gotten scammed, and it's usually the same kind of tactics. And, you know, it's just all there in my paper. It took me a couple, 3 years to put it together. It's pretty much timeless information. Some of the information is, you know, talking about 911 and things like that. I haven't revised my paper for about a year and a half, but the other information about the scams is timeless. These are things that are still going on. It's things that people have to be aware of, otherwise you're going to fall into the same traps, because these people are really smooth. These kind of people are really smooth, and they can talk anybody into anything.
Well, let me just suggest to our listeners that they check around. They're very careful before they invest. Don't just take what somebody says. Check it out, compare it, check it through. And because, of course, the responsibility is on the person who's investing. So be careful of what you're doing. But I think Cal's advice that there are a lot of scams out there, and they're saying, oh, my goodness, if you buy what I'm selling you, why, it won't be confiscated, but anything else could be confiscated. You know about the confiscation back in the 1930s, don't you? And then from then on, they've got you. So right now we've got Jim calling from Aptos. Hi, Jim. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, a quick question. Let's assume that you had rental payment of $1,000 a month, and you had several thousand dollars, $6,000, $8,000. How many thousands of dollars in American dollars would you keep, paper dollars, Federal Reserve notes, for paying rent? And how much of those would you convert to gold or silver? Let's say you want to keep it on $1,000 a month, the rent, 3 months worth in paper dollars to pay rent, and beyond that things are going to get much worse. Would you want to convert everything beyond the 3 months worth of dollars, paper dollars, into gold and silver?
What do you think, Cal?
Well, that's a very good question. Hypothetical, of course, but very, very realistic, because down the line somewhere, as I tell people, I said, you have to have a cash cushion as long as the dollar is good. Only you can determine what you feel comfortable with it with there. I'm not in any place to dictate or say. But you know, you have to feel comfortable with the cash cushion you have. But basically then, the money that you don't want to lose beyond that, whatever you feel comfortable with, you should put into gold or silver. Because the beauty of gold is you can always sell it.
If you bought it at the right price, of course, that's the thing.
Right. You can always turn it back into paper dollars if you need it. One of my clients her mother's in a rest home, and she bought a lot of gold, but now she's selling it back at a really good profit, because she bought it, you know, back 2 years ago when gold was $290 an ounce.
Well, I know that the powers that be are trying to keep the price of gold down.
Right.
Because if it starts going too fast, everyone and his brother will recognize what's coming down the pike.
Right.
So, Is 90 days a good round number to work with? 90 days worth of paper dollars to pay, and anything beyond that?
Well, Jim, do you have a regular job, or what do you have? Do you have a regular income coming in?
Yeah, if you had a regular job, regular income coming in, so that if you set aside 3 months' worth of paper dollars, and then keep it at that 3 months' worth, and every additional dollar you have available, convert that into gold and silver, I guess.
Well,
that's good advice. I think that's wise.
Well, Jim, all you can do is what you feel comfortable with. A lot of people say 20% of what you have in gold and silver. I'm not a financial advisor. All I'm doing is saying that I think we're in for some real difficult economic times, and this is the time to make your preparation.
Except, one of the problems is that in the past number of years, we've had several crises come up where it looked like things were going to get really bad, and then we seem to survive those.
We sure have in the past.
And I'm wondering how close we are to the real crash.
Well, I'll tell you what, people like Jim Poplava, who I think is really one of the smartest people out there, thinks that the real crash is imminent. He says it's a perfect financial storm. And if you would have read his article on that, it should be up on his webpage. It's called Financial Sense, and that's Jim Poplava. Why don't you read that? I've been at this for 42 years, and I've seen the ups and downs. But I think that we finally got to the point of no return. Maybe I'm wrong. Only time's going to tell. I hope I'm wrong, but I wouldn't bet on it. Hey, look, we're out of time, Jim. Thanks so much
for calling.
God bless. And, Cal, I want to thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Well, it's always good to be on your show, and I look forward to it again next month.
All right, fine. Well, our guest has been Cal Grunwald. We've just been talking open, free discussion of where we are, and, of course, Jim's point. Well, we've heard this doom and gloom before, and, maybe we're going to come out of it, and I think that's absolutely true. But, of course, remember what Chicken Little happened. The sky is falling, and then when the sky was falling, nobody was concerned, or the little boy who cried wolf. And when the wolf came, why, of course, the people were devoured because they weren't prepared. So, anyway, whatever is happening, I believe that we are approaching what Jim Poplava calls the perfect financial storm. That's Jim Poplava. His website is financialsense.com. Let me suggest that to you. And, of course, Cal, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Stan, very much.
Bye-bye. And, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is principally financially supported by our listeners. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you think that what we have to say is worthwhile, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our last newsletter, we'll make it available to you. And then, of course, if you'd like to think about getting that book we talked about earlier, Fiat Money Inflation in France. It's really must reading to understand the ravages of inflation, because it talks about what happened in France over 200 years ago. And yet, as you read that book, it's like deja vu all over again. You can get the book by itself or along with Bastiat's The Law. And as I said, Bastiat was a contemporary of Karl Marx, and he writes about what's wrong with socialism, why it never works. And ladies and gentlemen, whether you know it or not, we have far more socialism in America today than Russia and China ever had. And America's wealth has been used through the years to finance and maintain those tyrannical governments. And if you don't believe that, you need to see my video, The Best Money or The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or read the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or better still, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927, because, of course, we cover the spiritual forces behind the problems that we face today. And so, to our listeners up there in the great Northwest, we are going to have to say goodnight, and we'll be back. We'll be running replays for the next few nights, but I hope you'll listen to them, because the replays we're running are excellent. So until we're back next Monday with you, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295, but we ask you that you hold your calls at least for a few minutes. We have with us on the line Arthur Burnclaw, who is a representative of the veterans. He's an advocate for the American Army and military veterans who are really being put upon and, of course, really mistreated by the Veterans Administration, being deprived of their rights under the law for disability. And we actually have a system by which government officials, government bureaucrats are rewarded for depriving people of their due rights according to the congressional mandates. They get rewards if they turn down the request for disability. And we have a totally corrupt Veterans Administration. But why should we be surprised? We have a totally corrupt Indian Administration. The Indian Affairs Group has actually stolen tens, if not hundreds, of billions of dollars from the Indians. But that's the very nature of government. It's always been corruption. It always will be corruption. That is why the founding fathers of America wanted to limit the power of government through all time by the change of the Constitution. But tonight Arthur wanted to talk about something else. He wanted to talk about what's coming up on the political horizon. He wanted to talk about George Bush, and I told him, well, I don't want to simply say bad things about George Bush. I think that there are problems with both of our political candidates, both George Bush and John Kerry. And certainly I find it difficult to support either one of them. So we're going to get to Arthur Burnclaw's ideas. But then I'm going to ask for you out there in the listening audience. I'd like you to call in and tell us what you think. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I think this is going to be probably one of the most important elections of our lives, because I don't think there's ever been a time when it was so apparent that both political parties are heading the same direction as far as globalism, in other words, dedicated to this one world government and United Nations, and the scams that have been used to, oh my goodness, we don't want to be in the International Criminal Court. We're not going to bring our men under there under any circumstances. You're not going to be able to try American soldiers. Well, why are we going to have to let you try American soldiers because of those pictures that we published about Abu Ghraib prison, but we feel just terrible about it. So now American soldiers and, well, probably very soon all American citizens will be under the control of the American International Criminal Court, and that could be for hate crimes or for anything else. And so we're transferring our wealth to other nations in the name of globalism. We're transferring our industries to other nations in the name of globalism. We're progressively impoverishing the American people, because why should the American people have so much when people are going without in other countries? But this is not a Republican or a Democratic program. It is a program of both political parties, and the American people have to understand that. Well, Arthur, tell us your thoughts about what's going on today.
Well, Dr. Stan, I'm going to discuss a couple of candidates that we have. There are two leading candidates, and I absolutely believe that either candidate that gets elected from our two main parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, I feel it's strike three for the American public. We've never had such a poor choice as we've got now. And, you know, the media is starting to realize what's going on. We're starting to get columnists, some very prominent columnists, that are writing articles about this. And I've clipped two of them right here that I think your listeners would be very interested in hearing. Michael Daley of the New York Daily News, and Jimmy Breslin from the New York Jimmy Breslin is from the New York Newsday News. And it's quite something. I a couple of months ago, I wouldn't have seen anything like this in the paper, but they're starting to realize what's really going on, and I think that's this is something that we should be discussing here tonight before I get into other things. And the first article I see here is says here, the heading is "Of Real Men Versus Real Men of War." That's R-E-E-L, which is movies. And this is by Michael Daly, and the obituaries noticed, excuse me, the obituaries noted, as if it were an incidental detail, that a bad knee exempted Marlon Brando from the draft during World War II. But otherwise, an 18-year-old Brando would likely have been sent into combat where fate is blind to even the brightest future promise. A bullet or shell fragment might have left young Brando a crumpled heap on some European field or Pacific beach, thereby cheating the world of ever witnessing the genius of the man widely considered to be one of the greatest film actors ever. And that talent first appeared on screen 5 years after the end of the war in a movie called The Men. The 26-year-old Brando, he played an army lieutenant who lands in a paraplegic ward in a veterans hospital after he's crippled by a sniper's bullet. Brando prepared for his role by spending a month in a veterans hospital among men who had been mangled by maniacally indifferent bits of metal, and his method acting made him seem to become his character as he uttered the movie's most notable line. "That's funny. I was afraid I was going to die. Now I'm afraid I'm going to live." Indeed, the realism of Brando's portrayal of a disabled young soldier was not surpassed in movie theaters until just days before his death with the release of a movie called Fahrenheit 9/11. The young men in this hospital scene are soldiers who actually were mangled, and you wish dearly it were not so real. One soldier has a missing leg and a badly scarred face that'll likely preclude any other movie role. Another sits with two bandaged stumps at the end of his arms and describes the phantom pain of hands that are no longer there, like a vice. Other scenes show soldiers beyond all pain and violently deprived of any future possibilities. Could that young man, reduced to a heap on an Iraqi street, have been the next Brando? Could the soldier who vanishes in a bomb blast have been a great scientist or teacher or doctor or a great dad? What about each of those ill-fated souls in the flag-draped coffins? "I want him to be alive," cries the mother of a soldier who died in Karbala. The mother reads from the soldier's last letter, "I can't wait to get home and get back to my life." The film was supposed to have been distributed by Miramax, but the company was barred from doing so by its ostensibly a political parent, the Walt Disney Company. The co-chairman of Miramax, Harvey Weinstein, and his brother Bob offered $6 million of their own money for the rights. But as reported in the Wall Street Journal, Disney nixed any deal where the Weinsteins got a bigger share of the profits than they would have received had Fahrenheit 9/11 been released in a way of other Miramax films. The deal was finally reached in which the Weinsteins got their usual roughly 40% of the net profits, minus Michael Moore's considerable cut. The remainder, some 60%, will go to a charity to be designated by Disney. On Friday afternoon, a Disney spokeswoman said the company has yet to decide on a charity or charities. What is certain is that the sum will be huge, as Disney's refusal to release Fahrenheit 9/11 helped make it a hit. Only rightful recipients of the money, the only rightful recipients of the money should be apparent to anyone who has seen Fahrenheit 9/11, or for that matter, has seen The Men. Every penny should go to the soldiers who have been disabled in combat and to the families of those who have lost their lives. Not even those who love President Bush and loathe Michael Moore could object. As it is, most soldiers carry a $10,000 life insurance policy, tax-exempt death gratuity. And the surviving spouse gets nothing. Gets a monthly stipend. Supposed to be getting a monthly stipend if he was a veteran who was on disability. Let's say he left the service and he was on full 100% disability, and he died anyway. They'd be getting a $967 monthly stipend plus $241 per child. But this does not apply to the people who are killed in combat. This is only veterans who have been 100% disabled. And with this modest amount of money, adding this up, this is like a fraction of what went to the families of the rescuers killed on 9/11. The firefighters at Engine Company, number 167, and Ladder Company, number 87, on Staten Island, New York, they recognize this, and they've been selling T-shirts to raise money for the family of Army Staff Sergeant Paul Sweeney of Alpha Company, 3rd Special Forces Group, who left behind a wife and two boys, ages 4 and 2. Of course, not even 60% of the net for such a hit as Fahrenheit 9/11 can compensate for the loss of a life and all the future promise to which war is blind. But the money from each ticket sold is going somewhere, and at least some of it should go to those who risked all and those who, in the movie's words, serve, so that we don't have to. And this is by Michael Daly of the New York Daily News.
Well, you know, Arthur, I did a study on the causes of the wars of the 20th century, and we actually put that out in it. Actually, two videos, but they're really more or less the same story. The first one was called The Little-Known Cause of Wars of the 20th Century, and the second one was Iraq, The Untold Story, but it's the same story. And starting with the Boer War back in the, I'm sorry, with the Spanish-American War in 1898, it was a totally contrived war. We went to war supposedly because the Spanish had sunk the battleship Maine, but the Spanish didn't sink the battleship Maine. It was all a propaganda campaign.
Yes.
Because, of course, William Randolph Hearst had wanted to get us into that war. The elitists who wanted an American empire wanted to get us in the war. In fact, Hearst had sent a cable to a man who was living in Cuba saying, "You provide the pictures, I'll provide the war." And they did. And they got the American people to back going to war over an incident that never occurred. There was an explosion within the battleship Maine, not a Spanish mine, as the American people were told. 5,000 American boys died, but we killed hundreds of thousands of Filipinos who wanted their freedom, and we sent our people in to slaughter them, all part of this whole Spanish-American war. And you would have thought we would have lost our or learned a lesson after that. But then we were drawn into the First World War with a slogan that is so similar to the slogan we hear today about making a democracy in the Middle East. But this First World War was sold to the American people under the guise of the war to make the world safe for democracy, the war to end all wars.
That's such
an
incredible
lie. It was never intended to be that. That was not our battle. We were manipulated into it by a propaganda barrage financed by the J.P. Morgan Company and the munitions manufacturers who gained control of our government at that time, the media at that time, and the government. And after Woodrow Wilson ran on the slogan, he kept us out of war. 3 months after he was inaugurated, he was asking for a declaration of war to take us into a war that was of absolutely no concern to America, and 125,000 boys died, and twice that many were injured, and overall 20 million people died in that senseless war. And when are the American people going to understand that all these wars are and were unnecessary? And certainly we did not go into Iraq because there were weapons of mass destruction there. Nor did we go in because Saddam Hussein was a wicked man, because we financed him in the 1950s when he worked for the CIA. And if you want the background of that, we'll get it for you. Then, of course, we financed him during the 1980s. If you want the background of that,
yeah,
call us at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you an article out of the Washington Post that gives you the whole background of how we not only supported him, we funded him, we gave him the material to build his chemical and biological weapons, those weapons of mass destruction we're so concerned about. And now, of course, our boys are dying in a country that we backed, where we backed the wicked Saddam Hussein. yes, the people are better off without him, or are they? Things are totally chaotic over there. In fact, a lot of Iraqis are saying, you know, as bad as Saddam Hussein was, at least we had law and order,
yeah,
and it was safe to walk in the streets. So pick up the story from there, Arthur. But the American people have to understand that all of the wars are contrived. And it's about time the American people said, no, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a war and nobody came?
Dr. Stan, it's purely a war for profit, like most wars are, wars for profit.
Well, I
that's
think
that's exactly
that
why we're there.
Well, Arthur, I would disagree with you. You know, it's like wet streets don't cause rain. Wet streets are the result of rain. Mm. Profits are not the reason for war. They are the benefit of war, but the wars are fought for far different reasons than that. And you can go
expansionism
back. There, no, it really has to do with this idea of establishing the one world government, and we can document from the writings of the globalists exactly why they have created all of these wars. And of course, they wanted the First World War to bring about this world government. They wanted the Second World War to bring about the world government. The Third World War will probably bring about the world government. That's the real cause.
God,
yes,
I
some people
not
make profits, but that is not the primary motivation behind the people who really control this, because they don't need any money. They've got all the wealth of the world at their fingertips. So pick up the story from there.
What I'd like to point out here on this column by Michael Daley, the spinmeisters in the government went out of their way to feed Michael Daley the wrong information. Michael Daley was told by the spinmeisters in the government, when he checked on some what benefits they, a man has, his family has, when a man dies in combat, the government told him, most soldiers carry a $250,000 life insurance policy. And everybody knows this is not true. It's a $10,000 life insurance policy. And all families receive an immediate $12,000 tax-exempt death gratuity. The surviving spouse then gets a monthly stipend of $967 plus $241 per child, along with 55% of the extremely modest retirement pay the soldier would have received had he been only disabled and not killed. Wrong, 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 wrong. He was fed this false information by the government. And this is what we have in the government. We have all these spinmeisters who are spreading these stories, which are not true, and they've been conning as well as intimidating the media. But now we've got columnists like Michael Daley came out, and here's something by Jimmy Breslin, and this is called "Ignorance is Bush's Bliss." In less than a month, this is in the Newsday, New York Newsday newspaper. In less than a month, there have been 36 same-sex deaths in our troops in Iraq. There is one woman, Army Specialist Julie Hickey, age 20, who died of illness on the 4th of July. If the men were getting married, George Bush would shout more than ever for a constitutional amendment. As they die in battle in the Middle East, Bush doesn't even notice. This man of limited mind and unlimited arrogance is unmoved by deaths that have put blood on his hands for all time. I want to tell you what it's like to type this list of names that runs below. You keep typing these ages of 20 and 19 and 22, and soon you hear them. They're shouting over loud music, laughing uncontrollably. Girls, 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 swearing viciously at their fates, and always with these young, fast voices. Why should they die? What right have we to play God?
Well, Arthur, why don't you hold that, and we'll get back to that in just a moment here. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll have you read the rest of that. But, you know, isn't it interesting that the government didn't want the pictures of the flag-draped coffins shown to the American
right
people? Why is that? Why? Because in war, the first victim is the truth. The first casualty is the truth. It's all propaganda, ladies and gentlemen. They control our reality. They control our mind. They control what we think and believe.
And they're starting to get very frightened.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Arthur Bernclau. And, of course, we're talking about the war. And, Arthur, I'm going to ask you to hold off reading the rest of that article until our listeners return. Some of them are listening to the Well, they're not listening to the program right now, but they will be in about 4 minutes. But, you know, I think the great tragedy of today is that you can still manipulate the people, good people, into supporting a war. And we were told, well, yes, we were told that we had to go in because of weapons of mass destruction. We couldn't wait any longer. Saddam Hussein was giving the weapons to the terrorists, or he might give the weapons to terrorists. We have to go in and fight this war, and this is a moral war, as if any war is a moral war. I go to meetings, and they're made up primarily of Christians, and we're told, oh, this is a moral war. And the amazing thing is, nobody stands up and says this is not true. No war is a moral war. Now, people say, well, the Second World War was a moral war because Adolf Hitler was such a terrible person, and he was such a terrible person. But what people have forgotten is that he was largely financed by Western financiers. I have a letter, and if you would like to see a copy of it, it's in our syllabus, entitled Iraq, the Untold Story. It was a letter that was written by the American ambassador to Germany in 1936. His name was Ambassador Dodd. He's writing to Colonel House, and he's saying, why are all these American corporations building up Germany's military capacity? I mean, after all, they can't get any money out of the country. There are exchange controls. Do the people who own stock in these companies back home realize that we're building up the military capacity of Germany, which nobody wants another war, and yet we're preparing for a war, and there's no profit to be made? And, of course, the American people don't understand that it was massive infusions of financial aid to Adolf Hitler, massive infusions of technology by Standard Oil Company and by Exxon, and giving them the patents so they could actually produce their ethyl fuel, so they could have their fighter aircraft and the technology so that they could create oil, because they didn't have any oil until they actually took Romania, so they had to be able to convert it out of coal, and they had to be able to make rubber. And we gave them all of this capacity. I'll never forget, I had a friend of mine, his name was Abe Hebert. And Abe actually was with one of the first waves of men that went in at Normandy. And he was taking pictures, and a lot of the German trucks had Dunlap tires on. The Dunlap is an American corporation. And, of course, all those pictures were confiscated, because the last thing that they wanted the American people to know is that a lot of the trucks that ferried the German soldiers to Normandy to kill our boys were Ford manufactured and General Motors manufactured. And those of you who haven't read Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler need to get the book and read it. You will find out, of course, about how we financed Adolf Hitler. Trading with the Enemy is another excellent book. How we actually traded with some of our major corporations, traded with Adolf Hitler during the course of the war. In fact, there was a man named Prescott Bush. He worked for Brown Brothers Harriman Bank, and of course they were indicted because they were had a great deal of money from the Nazis on deposit in their bank and were looking after the Nazis' money. But these are the stories we never hear. Once again, we create the best enemies money could buy, and we have war after war after war, just as we're building up the Chinese communists today, just as we're financing the Russians in preparation for World War III. Do you really want your children to die there? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough. Arthur, do you want to go ahead and pick up reading the rest of that story?
Oh, yes.
And then let me just get our telephone number out here. And we'd like to know, if you're out there in the audience, how you feel about what Arthur's saying. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Arthur, go ahead, pick up the story there.
Okay, why should they die? What right do we have to play God and send them to be blown to pieces? I finish typing this job and go to bed. These young should be living in the sounds of an American summer, of water rushing over rocks or lapping over a lakeshore pier or crashing onto an ocean beach, of music in the soft nights, or the elated cries of kids running through a field. If not a field, then enjoying nature's finest sight, a crowded city street. Anywhere except a box on a plane arriving at Dover, Delaware, where morgue workers do autopsies and put dress uniforms on the dead bodies. This president, with the face of with a face of rich boy smirks and sneers, who lives on the dark side of truth, does not deign to be present. He is not a man for mourning, this George Bush. Life is best when he struts onto a stage in front of an overjoyed white audience in York, Pennsylvania, where he sputtered that the people fighting in Iraq had hijacked a great religion, and now we would fight them anywhere. That great religion is Islam, and it has 2 billion members worldwide. And if he wants to fight them, let him go ahead. He likes it so much he was having his teeth cleaned when he was eligible to face bullets. He could send his vice president, Cheney, except Cheney has the North American record for draft dodging, 5 deferments in Wyoming, and clearly likes his wars to be fought by others. When Senator Jay Rockefeller released a report on the ocean of falsehood used by Bush to take this numb country into a war, Rockefeller said that Bush wanted to be a wartime president. He sure did. When he came into office, Bush regarded China as enemy number one. It's good that he found Iraq before taking on China. He then was nasty to North Korea, saying that the United States had no intention of invading North Korea. If he wasn't thinking of it, why did he mention it? But then he said that all options are on the table. If North Korea didn't disarm, North Korea would be a difficult match. It sure was in the 1950s. Bush and his defense secretary, Rumsfeld, warned Syria and Iran about meddling with our war in Iraq. We could have troops fighting at once in Fallujah and simultaneously in the alleys of Tehran and Damascus, maybe in North Korea too. You get an example of the sheer religious madness of this Bush by looking at the casualty lists which we run below. They represent less than a month of shooting in a strange land, and their ages represent the monstrous crime of young death. Now, I won't go through the whole list, Dr. Stan. I've got a list of 33 people here, 19 of which are Marines. And they're all young people, except for one person in his 30s. They're all in their 20s or 19 or 18. And these people should be planning their lives now, planning to go on with their futures. Instead, they're in flag-draped caskets. And something's got to be wrong with a country that permits something like this to happen and permits these young people to go out into combat and get killed for a war that we didn't need, that I don't think anybody except the politicians wanted, and a war that's going to get us nowhere. It's going to get some people a lot of profit, but it's going to get us nowhere as Americans.
No, but of course it's going to draw us into World War III, and the purpose of World War III is to bring about a world government, because then we're told there'll be no more wars. Once we have the world government with the world dictator and the world police force and the world army and the world legislature and the world court and the world prisons and concentration camps, where there'll be people like you who obviously are not thinking clearly. You must be mentally ill because you're not going along with what everybody else believes.
That's right. Now, you know, Mr. Bush found the only air base in the country where there aren't any planes, because Mr. Bush was afraid to go up in a plane. And so much for Mr. Bush's military prowess.
You're talking about when he was during the Vietnam War, when he used his daddy's influence to not to have to go to Vietnam.
Oh, yes. And let's talk about the other fellow, Kerry, who's running against them on the Democratic Party.
All right, fine. Well, we'll get to John Kerry in just a moment when we get back here. But we welcome your calls from out across America. I think that the American people are responsible for what our government does. And I believe that wars are created for far different purposes than the men we send overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die are ever allowed to know, or that they are created by far different reasons than the American people are allowed to know. And when we get back here, I'm going to give you some shocking facts that you've never heard before, but you'll hear right here on Radio
Liberty. Starting to learn, Dr. Stan. We are starting to...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough. And we're, Arthur, go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Oh, it's Arthur Bernclough.
Right.
Okay. Now, we started talking about the Democratic candidate, John Kerry of Massachusetts. John Kerry supposedly was a war hero in Vietnam. This is what we are led to believe. Now, people who have seen the way John Kerry has acted when he came back to this country from Vietnam, military people, are thoroughly ashamed of the way he has acted.
Tell me, Arthur, we're told that he got three Purple Hearts. If you got three Purple Hearts, you got wounded three times, did you get an automatic ticket home? Was that it?
Yeah, if you get three Purple Hearts, you can automatically come home now.
All right, fine. Some people have said that those Purple Hearts were sort of like little scratches. Do we know anything at all about his wartime activities?
We sure do. Mr. Kerry got three Purple Hearts. He wrote up his own commendations. He was in a position to write up his own commendations for the Purple Hearts. The three wounds he had could be covered by the length of one Band-Aid. Mr. Kerry served a total of 4 months of combat time. During those 4 months, he served it in the air-conditioned cabin of his boat. In other words, I'm saying he's a fraud. Just as the Republicans have their fraud, the Democrats have their fraud. So, we have a balance here on either side. Do you vote for one fraud or do you vote for another fraud? And this is what I said initially in the beginning, that either candidate you vote for is like strike three for America. Now, there are third, fourth, fifth, and sixth party candidates that are running who are way more qualified than either one of these two. And yet the chances are very, very likely. It's almost a sure thing that one of these two people are going to be elected, to the detriment not only of veterans and military people, to the detriment of the entire country. And I keep hearing people say, well, I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils. Now, when you take that attitude, all you do is you perpetuate the evil. Now, we've gone from a president, Mr. Clinton, who would actually do your cat, to a president now who is doing your kids and your grandchildren in Iraq and Afghanistan and wherever else this imperialistic dream of the governments is going to end us fighting another war. And it's up to the American people now. It's up to the American people.
Hold that thought there, Arthur. We're going to bring our seasons right back with it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough. He's been talking about John Kerry. He commented that John Kerry, I got three Purple Hearts. Well, if you got three scratches over there, well, then you come home, according to Arthur, he wrote his own commendations, they really were not major wounds. He served for 4 months over there. According to Arthur, it was an air-conditioned cabin of the boat he commanded. But Arthur Bernclough doesn't think of very much of his military prowess, and certainly doesn't support Mr. Kerry's candidacy either. He doesn't like either candidate. Would that be a fair thing to say, Arthur?
Absolutely. All right. Absolutely.
Before we go on, I just wanted to comment very briefly about the reason we went to war in Afghanistan. Now, I'm going to tell you something that you will never hear elsewhere. However, you can go to your internet, you can look up the 911 Commission staff reports, and it's either in Part 15 or Part 16, the story I'm going to tell you. They have actually had an opportunity to evaluate the background of what happened in Afghanistan immediately prior to the 9-1-1 attack. And, of course, everybody within Afghanistan, everybody within the Islamic movement throughout the world knew the attack was coming on the United States. Everybody, of course, in German intelligence and French intelligence and Jordanian intelligence and Israeli intelligence and Russian intelligence knew the attack was coming on the United States and told us, but we had no idea what was going to happen. We thought it was going to be overseas. That's why we had made no preparations. But what happened in Afghanistan, according to the 9-1-1 Commission staff report, is what you are never going to hear from Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw. And that is that the leaders of the Taliban were totally against the attack. Mullah Omar had actually gotten bin Laden to promise there would not be an attack, and he violated that, and he was going to go ahead and get the attack. So the leaders of the Taliban were against the attack, totally. but so were most of the leaders of Al-Qaeda. The terrorists did not want the attack, in part because they did not want to offend Mullah Omar, but a lot of them realized that there would be retribution. They opposed it. The only person who wanted the attack, it would appear, in the leadership of Al-Qaeda was bin Laden, who had been a former CIA asset during the Afghan War, and many people believe still was. In fact, those of you who have not yet read the article that appeared in Le Figaro, a French newspaper, pointing out that in July of 2001, just 2 months before the 9/11 attack, why bin Laden was in the American hospital in Dubai, being treated for a kidney ailment, and there he was visited by the head of the CIA. And if you read the rest of the article, and I think it's included either my last month's letter or the month before that, why Le Figaro suggested that bin Laden was feeding information to the CIA about Al-Qaeda activities. So whether that's true or not, well, all we can do is say that only one newspaper in the United States picked that up. All the rest of the newspapers just deleted that wire service article, because the last thing we want the American people to know is probably the only person or the only leader in Afghanistan who wanted the attack was bin Laden. And then we went and we killed all those people. They weren't our enemies at all. But what we have done now is make them our enemies and make Islamic people, Muslims throughout the world, our enemies. We have done more to recruit people into Al-Qaeda by going into Afghanistan, and we killed 31,000 people. We only lost one of our own. Isn't that amazing? Maybe two. We lost.
You created a holy war, Dr. Smith.
Right, and it was a terrible, terrible thing. There was 31,000 were slaughtered. They were not our enemies, but they are now, and we are moving into World War III. If you'd like to verify what I'm saying, you want the documentation on it, I'll be glad to send it to you. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If we're telling the truth, then we have done a terrible thing as a nation. And if you are silent, you become part of the problem. So pick up the story from there, Arthur.
Dr. Stan, your last newsletter was a masterpiece. It was a revelation. I think that every American owes it to himself to read this newsletter.
Well, it's up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. It's the May-June newsletter, but if you don't have access to the net and can't get to our website at RadioLiberty.com, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't had a newsletter from us for some time, we'll be glad to send you one. Of course, we can't send them out to everybody without charge, but if you'd like a free one, we'd be glad to send you one. Hopefully you'll want to, of course, get them on a regular basis. But thank you so much for your words of encouragement, Arthur.
It was a beautiful newsletter. And it's, I mean this, it's something that every American should read.
Wait till you see the latest one. I just wrapped it up today, and I'll tell you what, it even scares me.
Can't wait. It's beautiful writing, and it hits you between the eyes. And, you know, I come out against the Veterans Administration all the time, and they deserve to have me come out against them, and I can't say enough bad things about them, because these people are totally dishonest and evil, and they do things like paying each other bonuses to deny claims. They deny claims just for the sake of denying claims, and it's not just a meanness. There's a profit motive in there for them. And I just came across something else, and I'd like to thank Ron Reagan, the old Sarge who broadcasts out of CBS in Orlando. And he just sent this letter to one of my publishers, Eclipse Magazine, NavVets. And he said, "Dear NavVets, recently came across your fine Eclipse Magazine of fall-winter 2003. I decided to send you a letter that I recently sent to my Florida U.S. senators and my representatives. To date, I have not heard a word from any of them. In addition, I phoned the Defense Finance and Accounting Services, DFAS, in Cleveland, Ohio, and asked them to verify my numbers. $20,000 and 2.5 million vets who signed on to protect their spouse. 55% payments or 35% payment. Survivor benefit plan. No response from any of them. So I use my best federal guesstimate judgment on the exact number of retired veterans who who have donated over $45 billion into the Retired Military Trust Fund. That's called the RMTF. You know what? There's no money in the RMTF. Where has it gone to? Even the government accounting office has no idea where the money went. No accounting as to who allowed and who dipped into the fund to pay for various worldwide nefarious and clandestine operations. What a great country we have. Screw the veteran at every turn. Screw the military retiree at every turn. Looks to me, although I and 2.5 million other retirees have been duped into paying an extortion racket for the last 30 years or so. And whoever heard of paying the U.S. government lots of money during these years as a protection racket so my spouse would have the basic needs of survival, food, shelter, and clothing. But Congress, this past April, would not pass the widow's tax to rescind the reduction of pension benefits from 55% to 35% when surviving widow reaches 62 years of age. You know, the widow's tax on military retirees here, they get 55% of what his military retirement would have been, but when they reach 62 to go on Social Security, the government drops that to 35%.
Well, of course, the thing is, people have to understand, it's all a welfare scam. Social Security is not a trust fund. It is a welfare scam.
Exactly.
And this is all where, of course, if you've got your hand out to government, you become dependent upon government, but never trust them because they will eventually destroy you. They will destroy your savings because government is like fire. It is a dangerous servant, but a fearful master, and unfortunately it is becoming our master. They're taking the chains off the politicians and forging them for the citizens.
Dr. Stan, this is the gospel, what you said. I hope people are listening, and I hope it's registering. And they said it was a great idea, they liked it, but there are no monies in the 2004 budget. And that's when I went ballistic. What were we paying $55 to $100 for a month over the last 30 years? Where is that $45 billion we paid for that protection?
It's probably in the money that they took from the Indians' funds, you know, that the hundreds of billions of dollars that came from the oil and gas that was on their land. The government thought that they could just use that better for the sake of the Indians, and the only reason they took it because they thought the Indians had wasted, and they stole it all. And actually, there are lawsuits against the government for $100 billion, money that they've stolen from the Indians, and they're putting off the lawsuit and putting it off. And of course, the Indian Affairs Department has destroyed all of the records. Oh, shucks, we don't know what happened to him. Sort of like Sandy Berger, who is Bill Clinton's assistant today. I just don't know how it was that I took all these things illegally. It was just a mistake from the archives and just happened to destroy a lot of them, but it was an honest mistake. And if anybody believes that, they're incredibly naive. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And the tragedy is America is the greatest nation in the world. But we are losing it because the people are not involved. They're not being informed. They're not hearing the truth. And that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, to try to get the people to understand that if they don't take a stand now, stand up and say no, no more. Why, they'll very soon be on their knees saying, yes, I'll do whatever you want me to.
So, now, Mr. Reagan says, please read my letter to senators and representatives attached, plus info as to what I'm doing to inform as many veterans as possible here in Central Florida via my radio and TV programs. Now, I hope your readership members will follow my lead and use my basic letter for them to copy or reword as they see fit. Also include the toll-free telephone number provided to reach all Senate and House members and others who are the decision-makers in Washington, D.C. Now, I have to give this number out, but I strongly don't believe in it. I think it's a study in futility. Their toll-free number, if you want to complain about it, is 1-866-877-4455.
Well, now let's explain just a little bit of what you've said, Arthur. I assume then that veterans are actually been putting money into sort of like an insurance fund for their spouse, so that if, when they die, why their spouse will continue to get a stipend from the government. Is that correct?
Right. This is for military retirees.
All right, fine. But the trouble is that there is no money in the fund?
That's right.
sort of like the Social Security Fund. It's got a government IOU there, but they've stolen the money so that they could give it away for benefits to people so that the politicians could get reelected. And, of course,
exactly.
We want to give it to
a couple of years ago, there was $45 billion in that fund, and now they claim there's nothing in there.
It's sort of like Social Security. There is nothing in the Social Security Fund. It's a Ponzi scheme. And I suppose that the veterans' retirement then for the spouses is a Ponzi scheme built upon the same thing.
Well, military retirees are calling this a $45 billion protection racket that the Department of Defense and Congress cooked up years ago. And they're calling it, and I'll tell you something, Dr. Stan, I think they're right.
And so what they're doing then, of course, when you get to be 55, why then they cut, or cut to be 62, then they cut the benefits of the surviving widow because she's getting money from Social Security, is that it?
Yep.
And yet, of course, how much is she going to get altogether? It's certainly not enough to live on, is it?
It's a pittance.
How much would the average widow get?
I think they're getting something like a little over $1,000.
All right.
$1,000,
and then, of course, they cut them from $1,000.
And they cut them down from that.
Okay, fine.
Now, are you aware of the Army Stop Loss Program, Dr. Stan?
No, why don't you tell us about it?
Okay. Soldiers won't retire until their combat zone tours end. That's a new law they just came up with now. Just passed it June 2nd, 2004. Washington, D.C., the Army will prevent soldiers in units set to deploy to Iraq and Afghanistan from leaving the service at the end of their terms, a top general said Wednesday. The announcement, an expansion of an Army program called Stop Loss, means that thousands of soldiers who had expected to retire or otherwise leave the military will have to stay on for the duration of their deployment to those combat zones. The expansion affects units that are 90 days away or less from deploying, said General Frank L. Hagenbeck, the Army's Deputy Chief of Staff for Personnel. Commanders have the ability to make exceptions for soldiers with special circumstances. Otherwise, soldiers will not be able to leave the service or transfer from their unit until they return to their home base after the deployment. The move will allow Army to keep units together as they deploy. Hagenbeck said, units with new recruits or recently transferred soldiers would not perform as well because the troops would not have had time to work together. They've got a point there about this, but there's two sides to this. The rationale is to have cohesive trained units going to war together, Hagenbeck said. Previously, the Army had prevented soldiers from leaving certain units scheduled for deployment to Afghanistan or Iraq, but Wednesday's move is the first time since September 11, 2001, that the Stop Loss program has been ordered so widely. The announcement comes as the Army is struggling to find fresh units to continue the occupation of Iraq. Almost every Army combat unit has faced or will face deployment there or in Afghanistan, and increased violence has forced the deployment of an additional 20,000 troops to the region, straining units even further. Some criticize the Stop Loss program as contrary to the concept of an all-volunteer military force. Soldiers planning to retire and get on with their lives now face months away from their families and homes. In an opinion piece in Wednesday's New York Times, Andrew Exum, former Army captain who served under Hagenbeck in the 10th Mountain Division, I'm sure you've heard of them, 10th Mountain Division in Afghanistan, called the treatment of soldiers under the Stop Loss programs shameful. Many, if not most, of the soldiers in this latest Iraq-bound wave are already veterans of several tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, he wrote. They have honorably completed their active duty obligations, but like draftees, they've been conscripted to meet the additional needs in Iraq. Hagenbeck said that the stop-loss move is necessary only because the Army is also undergoing a major reorganization that requires some units to be taken offline while they're restructured. Hagenbeck had no numbers on how many soldiers would be affected. Without the program, an average division would have to replace 4,000 soldiers, perhaps one-quarter to one-fifth of its strength before or during deployment, according to an Army press release. Now, there's two sides to this. I can understand what this is, the Stop Loss program, and in a lot of ways, it's necessary. But some of these people who have put in two and three tours, I think exceptions should be made, and these people should be allowed to go home. And you know, we've got a rigidity here with a lot of people who are saying, no, they shouldn't be allowed to go home. If it's good for one, it's good for all. No, there should be exceptions made. There really should be exceptions made. And here again, we are back to the Ferris Doctrine. We're back to the Ferris Doctrine. In other words, if they say it, that's the way it's got to be. And that's wrong.
Well, I think it's wrong. You have a contract, you sign a contract, and, you know, halfway through the contract, one side can't change it. And yet that's exactly what's going on today. And there, we have this war. We have a war that is not a declared war. It is an unconstitutional war. The first thing we did when we went into Iraq, we disbanded the police. We disbanded the army. And then we wondered why we had chaos. And now, of course, we're trying to reinstitute that. There's tremendous resentment against the American troops. A lot of people are fighting in Iraq just because they want to get the American occupiers out of there. We put in a puppet government. Those people are being slaughtered. The police are being slaughtered. The mayors are being slaughtered. The government officials are being slaughtered. And they will continue to be slaughtered as long as we have our troops there. And our troops are not coming home. We have created a situation where there's going to be total chaos in that country. The people there say, we want to vote. One man, one vote. Well, you have one man, one vote, one time, because Shias, with 60% of the population, will take over, and we're not going to allow that to happen. We're not interested in democracy. What we ought to do, of course, is separate the country into three parts. One part would be Shia. Let them do whatever they want to do. One part would be Sunni Muslim. Let them do what they want to do. One part would be Kurd. Let them do what they want to do. And, of course, there are Christians there as well. And the Christians were far better off under the regime with Saddam Hussein than they will ever be under a Sunni Muslim a dictatorship, because they will have a theocracy among the Sunnis, as they will have a theocracy in the Shia region. We've created an impossible situation. As bad as Saddam Hussein was, at least there was law and order, at least there was electricity, at least there was water. They don't have electricity. They do not have water. They have chaos there. And we're going to spend all this money to rebuild the country, billions of dollars appropriated, and only about 4% of it spent. How could you do such a bad job unintentionally? And, of course, if we had law and order, then we couldn't justify keeping our troops there. As long as there's chaos, we're going to have to stay. And those,
by the way, these 22,000 people, which our government are claiming our electrical and plumbing contractors, are not electrical and plumbing contractors. I know the country, Iraq, quite well. And in 10 years, you couldn't use 22,000 electrical and plumbing contractors there. They are mercenaries, and they will fight the war when Congress decides to recall our troops. They're there to fight the war, and they were recruited in North Carolina specifically to aid three companies down there, Bechtel, Halliburton, and Texas Southern Oil.
Well,
that's
I think that's
what they're doing.
We're in a terrible, terrible situation. And we're there because the good people are doing nothing. All that is necessary for evil to triumph is the good people do nothing, and the price the good people pay for their apathy and their indifference to public affairs is that they are ultimately ruled by evil men. And I would like to suggest that both of our major political candidates belong to a secret occult society.
Yes.
Neither one of them will discuss Skull and Bones. Where is their loyalty? Is it to the Constitution, or is it to the secret society that they belong to? What are the chances that that could have happened by accident, with only 15 people every year recruited into the secret society? Well, the chances are far greater if you're winning the jumble lottery than that what has happening by accident. Arthur, we're out of time. Would you like to make a parting thought for our listeners? And let's get your telephone number out.
Yes.
So veterans will know how to reach you, because certainly Arthur is a veterans advocate. He's there fighting the battles for the veterans who are being badly mistreated by the Veterans Administration. Get your number and your website out there if you have one.
Well, we've just about run out of time, and I had intended to read three letters coming from our fighting men in Iraq, but we'll hold that till the next program we do, and or the next time you have me as a guest, Dr. Stan. And I'm Arthur Bernclough. I'm Executive Director of Veterans for Constitutional Law. We're here to help veterans and their families and military retirees.
Get the number out quickly because we do have a
call. Okay, telephone number is 631-474-4261. My address is Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, and we'd love to hear from you.
Give me that address just one more time.
The address is 112 Jefferson Avenue, Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777.
Okay, fine. Matt calling from Michigan. Hi, Matt. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I just wanted to buttress what you had said. Junior Luciferian Secret Society Bush, in his inaugural speech toward the very end, made the statement, "There's still an angel in the whirlwind directing the storm." He then went on to state in one of his earlier speeches that this is the new crusade. And, of course, the Statue of Liberty was a gift from the Illuminati of France, wasn't it?
Right.
And then, furthermore, the draft. The draft applies only to United States citizens who are domiciled or resident of the District of Columbia or the federal territories. Then they engage in all these trickery of legal vernacular to make everyone think that they have an address and a zip code and et cetera. It's an intricate web of deceit, and we need to discuss this in a future program.
All right, fine. Thank you so very much. Appreciate hearing from you, and we got real problems, don't we?
Yes, we do, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Okay, fine. Arthur Potter.
We've got to resist that draft, Dr. Stan. We've got to have our sons and our daughters know how to resist that draft and stay alive.
All right. God bless you. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this has been sort of a free-ranging program tonight, but it's about both political parties, and Socialist Party R, Socialist Party D. They're both dedicated to globalism, big government, massive spending. They're both dedicated to the war. They're both dedicated to the draft. And how can we stop it? Well, first of all, we have to understand the spiritual forces behind what's going on. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it and read it and study it and then watch the video or read the book two or three times. Get a grasp of what's going on, because we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a cultural and ideological, but a military battlefield as well, because this all is spiritual. And if you read the scriptures, you'll find that in the end times, there's to be a great war in the Middle East. You read Ezekiel 38 and 39, and read Ezekiel 38:6, chapter 6. It really is a frightening picture of what I fear will happen here in America. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, please tell others about our radio programs and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until, well, Monday, I won't be away for, I'll be away for a few days, but we'll have some great programs here. So please listen, tell others to listen, and, until we're once again together, may the Lord be with you.